This book is to be neither an accusation nor a confession, and least of all an adventure, for death is not an adventure to those who stand face to face with it. It will try simply to tell of a generation of men who, even though they may have escaped its shells, were destroyed by the war. Chapter 1. We are at rest, 5 miles behind the front. Yesterday we were relieved, and now our bellies are full of beef and haricot beans. We are satisfied and at peace. Each man has another mess tin full for the evening, and what is more, there is a double ration of sausage and bread. That puts a man in fine trim. We have not had such luck as this for a long time. The cook, with his carroty head, is begging us to eat. He beckons with his ladle to everyone that passes, and spoons him out a great dollop. He does not see how he can empty his stew pot in time for coffee. Chardin and Müller have produced 2 wash basins, and had them filled up to the brim as a reserve. In Chardin, this is voracity. In Müller, it is foresight. Where Chardin puts it all is a mystery, for he is and always will be as thin as a rake. What's more important still is the issue of a double ration of smokes. 10 cigars, 20 cigarettes, and 2 quids of chew per man. Now that is decent. I have exchanged my chewing tobacco with Kaczynski for his cigarettes, which means I have 40 altogether. That's enough for a day. It is true we have no right to this windfall. The Prussian is not so generous. We have only a miscalculation to thank for it. 14 days ago, we had to go up and relieve the front line. It was fairly quiet in our sector, so the quartermaster who remained in the rear had requisitioned the usual quantity of rations and provided for the full company of 150 men. But on the last day, an astonishing number of English heavies opened up on us with high explosive, drumming ceaselessly on our position, so that we suffered as severely and came back only 80 strong. Last night, we moved back and settled down to get a good sleep for once. Kaczynski is right when he says it would not be such a bad war if only one could get a little more sleep. In the line, we have had next to none, and 14 days is a long time at one stretch. It was noon before the first of us crawled out of our quarters. 30 minutes later, every man had his mess tin, and we gathered at the cookhouse, which smelt greasy and nourishing. At the head of the queue, of course, were the hungriest, little Albert Krop, the clearest thinker among us, and therefore only a lance corporal, Müller, who still carries his school textbooks with him, dreams of examinations, and during a bombardment mutters propositions in physics. Leah, who wears a full beard and has a preference for the girls from officers' brothels. He swears that they are obliged by an army order to wear silk chemises and to bathe before entertaining guests of the rank of captain and upwards. And as the fourth, myself, Paul Baumer, and 4 are 19 years of age, and all 4 joined up from the same class as volunteers for the war. Close behind us were our friends, Chardin, a skinny locksmith of our own age, the biggest eater of the company. He sits down to eat as thin as a grasshopper, and gets up as big as a bug in the family way. Hai Vestus, of the same age, a peat digger, who can easily hold a ration loaf in his hand and say, "Guess what I've got in my fist?" Then Dietering, a peasant, who thinks of nothing but his farmyard and his wife. And finally, Stanislaus Kaczynski, the leader of our group, shrewd, cunning, and hard-bitten, 40 years of age, with a face of the soil, blue eyes, bent shoulders, and a remarkable nose for dirty weather, good food, and soft jobs.